Okay, I don't know who follows the email schedules with the shiurim, but this week's shiur was entitled Avraham Avinu. Now, if you look back on list, there's titles from this period of the year. It was also entitled Avraham Avinu. I'm not going to be repeating last year's shiur. When it comes to Avraham Avinu, it's endless. The discussion is endless. And we can have 100 shiurim entitled Avraham Avinu, and we won't exhaust the subject. So this year, I want to focus on one specific element and attempt a little bit to scrape the tip of the iceberg of some of the legacy that our immense forefather left for us. So first, let's preface this a little bit just with an appreciation of who we're dealing with when we're talking about Avraham Avinu. So we'll start all the way from the beginning. First pasuk in the Torah says, "Bereishis bara Elokim es hashamayim ves haaretz." Simple pasuk, the first pasuk we've all learned, seems straightforward enough. But the truth is that there's an imbalance in the pasuk. Hashem created the heavens and the earth. Are those two equal counterparts? Earth is a tiny speck. When you're talking about the heavens, you're talking about all the galaxies, all the planets, the sun, etc., etc., all the heavenly celestial bodies. Earth is one tiny speck. In the bigger scheme of things, it's one in millions. It's one in millions, right? Trillions. But countless. And there are plenty of stars and planets that are bigger than Earth. So there seems to be a certain imbalance. Heavens and Earth. But then when you move on, the imbalance becomes even more pronounced, because they created heavens. That's it. You heard? Heavens, now we're ready to move on. Volumes and volumes and volumes are written about the heavens, right? But the Torah told you that brief little pasuk, and then it zooms in on Earth. The land was, etc., waste and emptiness, and then it goes into elaboration of everything that Hashem did on Earth. Nothing about the heavens, right? A little bit, we come back to it on the fourth day, a little bit about the moon and the stars. But now the whole focus is Earth. Now the truth is that if we continue to notice, we continue to see this imbalance throughout the Torah's story of the creation and throughout the following parshiyos as well. What happens? The Torah moves on. And the Torah starts discussing quickly. Then on the second day, Hashem created the atmosphere. Right? That was the atmosphere. The Rakiya B'Soy Chamoyim. Was it created a separation between the upper and lower waters? What are the upper waters? It's the clouds. There's a lot of water up there. We don't see it from down here when you're in a plane.
Oh, I think the upper waters are water in space. There are
orbs. There are
water.
Really? Oh, there's water even higher up.
There's
on Earth. Oh, so talking about even higher waters. And then you have that separation, which is the atmosphere we live in. The atmosphere is also a complex subject. Also, volumes written about the atmosphere. But Torah makes very, very quick shrift, very short shrift of this. Pasuk or two, we move on. Hashem created plant life, animal life, fish, the birds, the animals. It's moving quickly, right? And again, if we're going to start elaborating on these pasukim, we'll be filling up libraries. But the Torah is brief, the Torah is concise, the Torah is moving quickly. All of a sudden, the Torah stops, screeches to a stop. What happens? Doesn't just say, it says, Hashem created the fish, the birds, the animals. What is that? Hashem created man, and move on. No. There's a short stop, there's a whole preface. We don't see this about anything else in the Bria. A whole preface. We're going to create man, and then a whole elaboration on man. This also is imbalanced. That quick mention of all the complexity of earth after the heavens have already receded into the background, the heavens have already been done with. Very quick, all the complexity of earth. Quick, man! All of a sudden, again, the Torah zooms in, and man becomes the focus. Okay, So again, we're seeing this pattern of the Torah zooming in. First zooms in on earth, then it zooms in on man. Then, as we move on, this pattern continues. Man starts multiplying, right? Cain has children, Hevel doesn't, oh well. Shays has children, man begins multiplying, the Torah starts telling us about families that are developing. Okay, the Mabul happens, kind of boils it down. But then afterwards, Noach and his family start multiplying. Then all of a sudden, as the families are starting to really spread out, and Avraham Avinu is born, and all of a sudden, once again, that zooming phenomenon continues. The Torah zooms in on Avraham Avinu, all the rest of mankind fades into the background, joins the heavens, joins all earth's complexities. Now all of mankind fades into the background, and the Torah's sole focus is in all the Milky Ways, right? In all of earth's complexity, the focus is on that one man and his family. That's Avraham Avinu. How do we explain this? The superficial explanation is, well, the Torah is telling the story of the Jewish people. But that isn't entirely true. The Torah is not a history of the Jewish people. It includes that, but that's not what the essence of the Torah is. You have to understand why the Torah is doing it, so what the Torah is. The Torah is Hashem's explanation, if we'll call it that, of the purpose of existence. All the mitzvahs of the Torah are really the secrets of existence. The world was created around the mitzvahs. We think that we have parents. It's appropriate to honor our parents. The Torah says, honor your parents. Really, it's the other way around. Because there's a mitzvah, this is a deep concept. I'm presenting it now in a superficial way. It deserves elaboration. Because there's a mitzvah of honoring your parents, Hashem set biology up so that each person has two parents. Because there's a mitzvah not to steal, Hashem set things up so that there's a whole social framework around you where other people have money and you can steal from them. And you're told not to steal. The world was created in order to provide an arena, if we'll call it that, a forum for the Torah's mitzvahs to be fulfilled. So really, the Torah is coming and telling us the secret behind the existence. So that's all fine for the mitzvahs, but the truth is that it's true also for all the stories that we see related in Sefer Bereishis, through Parshas Mishalach, when it's all just about the narratives, basically. A smattering, a handful of mitzvahs, 5 or 6. But really, what is this? What this is Hashem is explaining what the essence of the creation was. And yes, Hashem created a huge galaxy for the purpose of Earth. Earth was the focus. And Hashem created an immense Earth with a lot of complexity for the purpose of what? Man. And that's why the Torah zooms in on man. And man was created for what? So here we see it. The Torah zooms in on Avraham Avinu. It's saying, oh, here we're seeing what the essence of the creation was, what the purpose of the creation was. This man. Why this man? Because really, could have been anybody else also, theoretically. The world was created for the man who was going to connect to Hashem in the real way. The other people also were connected to Hashem. But Hashem was waiting for that person who was going to come and claim, or put it better, the person who was going to come and win the title of purpose of the world. Purpose of the world was meant to be played out in a people that represent Hashem in the world. All the rest of the world is a background for them. And Hashem was waiting for the one who was going to meet that purpose. Who was going to prove himself worthy of meeting that purpose and becoming plugged in for all of eternity as Hashem's people. And this is who Avraham Avinu was. And let's note that there were great people at the time. It's not like Avraham Avinu was the only great person. There was Shem, there was Aver. Even Noach was still alive in Avraham Avinu's lifetime. But as soon as Avraham Avinu appeared on the scene, even these great people faded to the background. They were very great, but Avraham Avinu came and outshone them in an immense way, to the extent that they simply faded into the background. It's like at night, you look up at the sky, you see the brilliance of all the stars, right? You see the moon shining. When the sun comes up, you don't see any of them anymore, because the brilliance of the sun simply knocks them out of the ballpark. This is what happened when Avraham Avinu appeared on the scene. Avraham Avinu was so great, and he achieved so much in terms of what a human being could possibly become. He maximized all the immense potential that Hashem invested into a human being, and therefore he was now designated as the purpose of existence. Do you have an extension cord? Oh, okay. If so, was really the one who earned us our title of the chosen people, and more than that, the Am Segula. The Am Segula. Segula really means, it denotes like a personal treasure. Something that a person holds. Sometimes a person has treasures and he keeps in a treasure house, but then there's something that a person so endears that he holds it within in his hand. And this is what the Jewish people are for Hashem. Because of Avraham Avinu brought himself to that situation to be chosen as this. That's one way it's expressed in the Pesukim. The other way it's expressed in the Pesukim is that Hashem girds us so closely connected with Hashem that he, so to speak, wears us around his waist. This was the accomplishment of Avraham Avinu, because he came and simply outshone anybody before him to the extent that he became established as the all-time great, who simply maximizes everything, so to speak, that Hashem envisioned when he created man. So therefore, we'll do well to heed the admonition of the Kadmoinim, who say that, considering that we're his seed, we're his continuation, we're the ones who he longed so much, right? He so yearned that his accomplishments should not be, that his accomplishments should not just be, shouldn't end with him, but they should be perpetuated. He should continue to live on through his seed. That's us. We're the ones who have to justify Avraham Avinu's pleas to have that seed, right? He was longing for people who can continue his life's work. He was investing a lot of hopes in what we were going to become. We were the ones who was dreaming for. Light wasn't enough for him. Light was a good Talmud for a while. And then he saw that no, it's not going to be his own genes, his own seed. It's not going to work. So that's us. So therefore, the Kadmonim say we should go back and study. What was it that these people did, the others, that made Hashem so infatuated with them, so in love with them. Study it a little bit and attempt to live up to these great standards, the standards that we actually have in our blood. So, this week, this year, we'll focus on one element. One of the things that Avraham Avinu initiated. Let's study a little bit the famous story of Ur Kasdim. Avraham Avinu was thrown into the fiery furnace. Now, at that point, it was still before he had actually ever gotten a revelation from Hashem. Let's note that. This was a man who began discovering Hashem at the age of 3. Right? Since then, it was a career of thinking and thinking and developing his understanding of Hashem. Developing his understanding of Hashem's expectations, which, where did he learn that from? Learned it from his own thoughts. By thinking into it more, trying to understand more, a career of thought, immense thought. He tried to understand how he got to all 613 mitzvahs. He did, he got to all 613 mitzvahs. To try to understand how. We certainly can't do it in such a small time frame, but we're talking about a sustained thought process that went on for years and years and years and years in trying to ascertain, based on his observations of Hashem, what Hashem considers wrong and right.
How is he able to observe, let's say, the mitzvah of tefillin? How are you able to observe that in nature?
What's that?
How would he be able to observe some of these mitzvahs in nature?
So the truth is, this is what I mean to say when I say that there was a very, very, very long, sustained, and constantly developing thought process. Nature was where he first began observing Hashem. Right? From there he went on to try to determine, what does Hashem hold valuable? How can I serve Hashem? Once he really started sensing Hashem in his life, let's note, let's spend a little time elaborating on this. It began with observing Hashem in nature. Once his observation of Hashem in nature was so clear, he started beginning to sense Hashem in his personal life. He started really beginning to feel that his life was being led by Hashem. He started beginning to feel how Hashem is handling all his affairs. He started noting all kinds of examples of personal hashgacha in his life. And these things are bringing him closer and closer to Hashem all the time. Now let's note something. We'll note something amazing. That's like the Kuzari makes the point. He says, who is greater, Avraham Avinu or the Jewish people in Mitzrayim? Certainly Avraham Avinu was much greater than them. The others were much greater than them. They were at a level that left a lot to be desired. Why did they merit the unbelievable, spectacular miracles that they saw at that time? Kriyas Yamsuf, the 10 Nisim, the 10 Makkos. The others didn't have anything like that in their lifetime. Why is that? Does it mean that they were greater than the others? He says, the Chukuzari says, on the contrary, it's a manifestation of the others' greatness, because the others were able to lead an entire lifetime simply from within themselves. They did not need miracles to spur them on and inspire them. Their inspiration was self-initiated. That's part of the unbelievable greatness. And that also is something to note. The fact that Avraham Avinu discovered Hashem at the age of 3, when did he get his first revelation? In his 70s. Right? For so many years, you would expect, right? A person who discovers Hashem and starts dedicating himself to Hashem, even with self-sacrifice. No, that he languished in a dungeon for 10 years. We know the story of Ur Kasdim, but there were other parts of his history too. He sat in the dungeon for 10 years. 10 years is a long time. Especially, you didn't know if you were ever going to get out. Right? But expect, let Hashem do something to him. Let Hashem strike his guards with lightning. Something. Nothing.
And yet he had a struggle practice every day. In other words, even when he was 10 years in the dungeon, he, let's say, you know, saw the light at the end of the tunnel. He wasn't starving to death. In other words, he always...
That's exactly the point.
Every day he was somehow...
For many people, that's not enough. That's exactly the point. This is his greatness. He was a man who saw Hashem's hand through his own thoughts. He didn't need those open miracles. Yes, that's right, exactly. Once he determined with conviction that there is a Hashem, and that Hashem is running the world, and that Hashem is running my life, he was able to see it even in a dungeon. Even though he had never had contact with Hashem, and didn't even have tradition about Hashem. This was the unbelievable greatness of Avraham Avinu. That sense of emunah that he was able to hold on to it throughout all those years. He reached the ultimate level of emunah that a person can reach, completely on his own, without any outside help. It was after he reached the peak that Hashem appeared to him in the form of reward, not because Avraham Avinu needed it in order to be encouraged further. The Jews in Mitzrayim needed it if Hashem wanted to get them to where he wanted to get them. So this was Avraham Avinu.
So why did Hashem let him languish for 10 years?
They're exactly the purpose we're discussing. To bring out the ultimate greatness in him. Imagine if a person, after a week of being in jail, starts becoming discouraged. It's a test of faith. Right? Another person might fail. He might need Hashem to appear to him at that point. Hashem says, I'm going to stretch the test of faith a little more. Another week. Avraham Avinu was still going strong. Hashem stretched the test of faith. A year. Another year. A ninth year and a tenth year. You're talking about a test of faith that Avraham Avinu passed with flying colors. Had Hashem appeared to him in the third year, he would have ruined it. This is exactly the point. Avraham Avinu was able to produce the ultimate greatness in mankind dafka by being left to his own devices, to his own mind, to his own feelings, without that open revelation. This was the greatness of Avraham Avinu. And so therefore, a big part of this thought process, he wasn't spending all those 70 years simply deducing from nature that there is Hashem. That was early on, relatively. He was constantly developing it and refining it. But there was an awful lot of thought that went into, so now how should I serve Hashem? How is it appropriate for me to serve Hashem? How is Hashem best served? And this involved very many different feelings and understandings, which brought him to understand all kinds of mitzvahs. If we'll say, just in a very, very superficial way, again, we're talking about a thought process that went on for years and years, but in a very superficial way, how might Avraham Avinu have reached the understanding of the mitzvah of tefillin? So we might say that at some one point he realized that the very fact that I consider myself associated with Hashem is something that I ought to boast, something that I ought to be proud of. And the truth is that that's what the essence of tefillin is. Tefillin is a badge of honor. You wear it on your arm and on your head, kind of like a crown, to show, we show off our association with Hashem. Worked this way with many of the other mitzvahs. How quite it worked with all the mitzvahs? We have to begin a 70-year thought process of intense, constant, unrelenting taxing of the mind to the fullest. That's why we don't come up with 650 mitzvahs through our own seichel. But Avraham Avinu did. When a person trains himself to think, the thought starts coming automatically. It becomes prolific. There's a lot of depth in man's mind. He was able to reach the chukim too. Chukim, there isn't necessarily a chayk that you can't understand the chayk. Chayk means mitzvahs that we would not necessarily think of on our own because logic does not necessarily dictate them. But it doesn't mean, I don't want to get into too much of a discussion. But the chukim can all be understood. You see the Kadmonim giving reasons for the chukim. A chayk is simply something that is not in the natural sense of morality or etc. Meaning, it's something above that. But, once a chayk is given to you, and you work backwards, you say, now that I know the chayk, let me try to understand it, you can gain profound understanding of chukim. There were many sfarim dedicated to this. Rabbi Hirsch's Chorev, the Sefer Achinuch, the Farshat Torah, there's plenty of reasons given for chukim. I don't know. They weren't kosher eidim at the time. When you really get into the technicalities of it, it gets a little complicated. there were no kosher eidim. So, how exactly it manifested? Probably not exactly along the guidelines of halacha the way we observe it today. Okay. Hashem and Eva, were they his eidim kiddushin? He married her back in Urkazdin. They weren't around. I don't know if they were kosher eidim there. It was a lousy bunch. Back in Charon. So now, I want to focus on one question. Really basic question. And this is really the lesson that I want to come away with. Again, we are not going to now embark on thought processes So a book on the thought process, by the way, is a pretty good thing. We can all indeed come up with good, profound thoughts by learning to think in a sustained way. And that is something we should learn from Avraham Avinu. That's not something we're going to focus on right now. By the way, Kodesh Avraham Stake says that there are three sources of emes, three sources of discovering the truth. One, Torah Shebiksav. Number two is Torah Shebaal Peh, tradition of the Chachamim. These are both the God-given truth. Number three, the Kodesh Avraham says, is pure, unbiased seichel taxed to its limits. Human seichel is a source for truth. Just there are a couple of qualifications, and that's why we can't rely on it. It's got to be completely unbiased. No preconceived feelings, ideas guiding us, and being able to rise above them. This, I don't think anybody, certainly not today, can come and say, I can manage. We're all under the influence of society, the way we grew up, etc., etc. It's basically impossible for a person to rise above that. I say basically because it is possible, but basically impossible. Unless a person, mamish, grew up in a vacuum. A person who grew up in a vacuum has a good chance, but even he has another condition that has to be fulfilled. That has to be taxed to the maximum. You have to push it all the way. That's the Ktzei Sachoishin has a discussion about that. One without the other won't do.
Avraham Avinu was in the vacuum, he was amongst
idolaters. And that's why I stressed basically impossible. Because on the contrary, Avraham Avinu shows us that it can be done. We would be foolish if we would rely on ourselves in this. But Avraham Avinu showed that it can be done. He completely purified any of his, managed to develop complete objectivity.
I mean, approach it completely unbiased.
What's that?
Not that we have the Torah.
Yes. Today we have the God-given word. Yes, to an extent. We shouldn't go second-guessing the things that we heard Hashem tell us. Yet there's still an awful lot of room for understanding and for developing understandings of how the Torah wants us to live through our sin. There's a lot of room for that today, even with the biases we have. If you work according to the guidelines of the Torah. Yeah, but even that was only after he began it on his own. He had to take it up. Hashem helped. That's very true. Hashem, when he saw that he was a man who was going to give it his all, Hashem began setting up things for him to succeed already even before he was born. One example, the Tower of Babel. The dispersion of languages. What was that for? Part of the point there was to help Avraham Avinu succeed. Had the entire world been one kingdom under one ruler, it would have been Avraham Avinu would have had nowhere to escape. Hashem told him, leave the area. Not only for the purpose of getting away from the problems he was facing, but for the purpose of being able to spread his teachings. Wouldn't have been able to do that had it just been one collective nation. So already beforehand, Hashem was starting to set the stage.
Everything is one language.
What?
Why couldn't
this start? One language under one ruler, all under Nimrod's control. There would have been nowhere to go. He couldn't do what he was doing in Ur Kasdim.
It's still
his language. It's not an issue of language. It's an issue of everybody in society is part of Nimrod's now. Rome was being oppressed in Ur Kasdim. He couldn't do his thing there. He couldn't leave his own life there. That would have been the whole world. This way there were other places to go. That's just one example. So again, there are two conditions. Again, the one without the other won't do. It's got to be unbiased, which again is very rare, and it's got to be pushed to the limit. If a person thinks a little bit superficially this, he can't assume to have indeed arrived at the right conclusions. But okay, these are all subjects that deserve a lot of discussion. But after all this important preamble, I want to get to the point that I wanted to really address. And that is the following. All this was not even the lesson I wanted to get out of Avraham Avinu tonight. But it's the following. Let's just take one example to try to analyze what his thinking was in one very particular significant moment in his life. Ur Kasdim. Nimrod. Not Nebuchadnezzar. Nimrod.
Nimrod takes Avraham Avinu and basically offers him the ultimatum. Either you come to your senses and understand like everybody else here does that I'm God, right? Drop your faith or get thrown into the fiery furnace. Fiery furnace was a very, very convincing intellectual argument about Nimrod's supremacy. Now, Avraham Avinu chose to be thrown into the fiery furnace. Now today, the Jewish nation is a very, very great nation. To us, the concept of giving up your life to sanctify Hashem's name is not a foreign concept. If would it come down to it, any of us would be able to do it. It's ingrained in our blood. And Jews, simple Jews, many times even Jews who are completely off, Jews who have forsaken Yiddishkeit. Many such instances in the Holocaust. When it came down to it, gave up their lives willingly to be Mekadosh Shem Shammai. Jews who wouldn't have believed that they themselves would do it in other circumstances. Avraham Avinu was the first one to do it. But with him it's a lot more puzzling, because first of all, of course, he didn't have the background. But besides that, once again, he had never had a revelation from Hashem. He had never been commanded to do it. Right? A, he didn't have the background. B, he had never been commanded to do it. Never been commanded to do it. Never had a revelation from Hashem. Was never told that he's expected to do that. What was it that made him do it? What was it that made him do it? Would it not have been legitimate to say, again, if there's no command to do it, would it not have been legitimate to say, alright, I'll say the word in order to save my life. I don't mean it anyways. I'll get out of here and I'll continue what I'm doing. What made him understand that this is what he should do? What made him choose that? You're talking about just a man who was committed to the truth in an absolute way and would not waver from it for a moment. If it began and ended with that, I would say that that's stupidity. You can say something to get them off your back and then get on with your life. Why not do it if there's no command? It has to be more than that. The truth is that here we're getting to a fundamental understanding of Avraham Avinu's life's mission in general, which actually culminated with this incident, but it wasn't an isolated incident. And here we come back to one of the fundamental elements of what we described before as Avraham Avinu's thought process, trying to analyze. After he reached that conviction that there is Hashem, is Hashem running the world and Hashem running my life, his next million-dollar question was, so how does he want me to serve him? What does it mean to me? He didn't do it for nothing. He wants something. What does he want? And this was a question that Sidi Chazon Ish describes at the beginning of his Sefer Emunah B'Tochen. It should drive a person mad. Right? So the intellectual should be going crazy for this question. We have the Torah, we're not bothered by the question. But a person who just forms and really starts thinking like this in an unbiased way and figures out that no, it can't be that the body created itself or developed by accident, etc. It was all created. He becomes keenly aware of a creator. He should be going nuts. He can't just move on with life. Why did he do it? What's the secret here? That's like the mashal that we've given a few times. A person opens the door to his house one day and finds on his doorstep a package. It says, to Mr. Benjamin Jacobson. No name of a sender, no return address, no nothing. Just package addressed to me on my doorstep. You open it up, in it is $50 million cash. Wads of bills. What would the normal reaction be? Now, think about this in realistic terms, not just in terms of the story. Realistic terms, you wouldn't jump for joy, you'd be very nervous. What's going on here? Right? Is this, who's going to be coming after me in the next 24, 48 hours? Who's trying to frame me? What's going on? You contact a lawyer. What am I supposed to do? You're apprehensive, right? You certainly are entertaining the possibility that maybe somebody is just so infatuated with me, and I'm crazy about myself, but maybe somebody else also has that same opinion of me as I do and decided to bequeath me $50 million. But if you're thinking about it in an intelligent way, that's not the most likely possibility, right? There are other darker possibilities that should make a person nervous. Right? So on the one hand, you're excited, maybe it will turn out that this is really just for me to keep. But on the other hand, you're apprehensive, you're nervous. Who did this and why? That's the question that a person who does sense a creator faces. Who did this and why? What was his purpose? Avraham Avinu understood that Hashem was not doing it in order to set us up. It's a long discussion too, deserves elaboration, but it was clear to him from the same way he observed Hashem, he also observed Hashem's agenda of kindness. This was clear as day to him. And therefore it was clear that Hashem created this world for kindliness. But what does he want from us? What are we supposed to be doing? And one of Avraham Avinu's conclusions was the following. Again, starting in a basic way, where he doesn't have information to work with, except the fact that yes, there is a creator. So he deduced, he said, one minute, Hashem concealed himself, and yet, he's all capable. If he really didn't want to be discovered, he could have made himself completely undiscoverable. So he concealed himself, he's capable. Most people in the world go through life without noticing him. And yet, it could be brought out. And Avraham Avinu concluded, he deduced, that it's man's job to bring out Hashem's presence. It's man's job to express Hashem in this world. And therefore, he began on what became one of his main missions in life, spreading awareness of Hashem. This became his mission in life. He understood that Hashem had left that void to be filled by man. Hashem himself did not reveal himself. He made it available to man, and he understood that if so, it's my job. What Hashem left undone, I'm going to go and do. I'm going to manifest, I'm going to express Hashem's presence. And this, we know, you look around in the parashas about Avraham Avinu, this is one of the main things he spent his life doing. Spreading awareness of Hashem, teaching about Hashem, etc. That was one of his main agendas in life. In other words, what he understood was that man actually has, and this is where we're coming to, a fundamental understanding of our function in life in a general way. This really encompasses everything. It's what we call in a broad way Kiddush Hashem. What is Kiddush Hashem? Kiddush Hashem means sanctifying Hashem's name. What does that mean exactly? What does sanctity mean? Very undefined word in the English language. Sanctity means holiness. What's holiness? Well, it's like spiritual stuff. It says something in the air. What is it? What's Kiddush Hashem? We can actually deduce what Kiddush Hashem is from its antonym, Chilul Hashem. What's Chilul Hashem? Chilul Hashem is from the term Chalal, void, emptiness. When things appear to be such that there is no Hashem, that's Chilul Hashem. Therefore, when a person acts in the wrong way, right? A person is not showing his fear of Hashem. A person is showing his no, so to speak, there's no one here to be scared of. That's Chilul Hashem. You're showing that, Chas V'Shalom, there's no Hashem. That's Chilul Hashem. When things happen on a public scale that counter or contravene the wishes of Hashem, showing that no, there's no Hashem to be worried about, that's Chilul Hashem. So what's Kiddush Hashem? Kiddush Hashem is the opposite. Kiddush Hashem is bringing out the presence of Hashem, manifesting that there is a Hashem. When a Jew walks through the street looking like a Jew, wear a yarmulke on you, you dress like a Jew, you look like a Jew, that's Kiddush Hashem. He goes, what are you showing? I look this way because there's Hashem. Anything you do, any mitzvah you do, when you do a mitzvah, Hashem can be yachol withdrew from the physical world. Hashem doesn't manifest physically. You can give Hashem physical manifestation in the world because you're a physical person by doing physical things. You do a mitzvah. Why'd you make a bracha before you eat now? Because there's Hashem. You showed with your action that there's Hashem. How would we directly fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, right? The most direct fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem that we do on a daily basis is Kiddush. You say Kaddish, Kaddish, Kaddish Hashem.
Are we getting to the
answer? Yeah, we're going to get there. But this is basically what Avraham Avinu understood as life's mission. But how do we do this? Kaddish, Kaddish, Kaddish. What are we saying? Again, it's a world where we look around, Hashem is concealed. You can go with the atheist approach. The world kind of put itself together. But then you walk by a shul and you hear resounding Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh Hashem. There are people yelling, there is a Hashem. Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh Hashem. What are you doing? You are giving Hashem physical manifestation in this world. In this sense, the way we can put it is, we are Hashem's ambassadors in this world. Hashem kiviyachol concealed himself. We are the ones expressing Hashem in this world. That's why, for example, the Maharal says, Hashem created a void that we fill. We are echad. There are 13 tribes in Judaism. Just a minute. Echad is the gematria of 13. Because we are the manifestation of the echad. Hashem echad.
Hashem, the absence of Hashem. So it isn't like Hashem conceals himself. Isn't that also like
the Chilul Hashem? Yes. In a sense, yes. But it's there for the purpose of us bringing it out. He did it for the purpose of us bringing it out. That is the purpose of the creation. That's the essence of what the creation is all about. Hashem is concealed and we bring it out. Let's wait for afterwards. I don't want to have a back and forth now. Now, this can be done in very many ways. And here we're going to get back to Avraham Avinu and this will end. This can be done in very many ways. Obviously, if a person gets up and addresses a crowd of 50,000 people and tells them about Hashem, it's a major, major Kiddush Hashem. Right? Ayimri Mekadosh Shem Shemayim is also Kiddush Hashem in quality. A person overcomes a very serious temptation. A person is facing a big temptation. Naturally, he should do it. But he doesn't do it. Why didn't he do it? That's not natural. Why didn't he do it? He's manifesting in a physical way Hashem's presence. He didn't do it because it's Hashem. Nobody might have noticed, but he manifested Hashem in this world. Doesn't necessarily have to be an issue. We think of Kiddush Hashem as showing other people. Right? That's why we sometimes confuse making a good impression with Kiddush Hashem. I have to look good because it's Kiddush Hashem. Right? Sometimes it's really Kiddush Hashem, sometimes it's Kiddush your own Shem. You want to sanctify your own day. Right? Kiddush Hashem. But Kiddush Hashem is not necessarily one aspect of Kiddush Hashem is toward other people. But Kiddush Hashem can also be in a closed, locked room where only you're present. You're giving Hashem physical expression in the world by refraining from doing something you're tempted to do. Or even more than that. Is it Rabbi Yehuda possibly? Or even more than that. Thinking about Hashem. By thinking about Hashem, you have brought Hashem can be yokel into the physical world. That's what the Kutzker Rebbe said. Where is Hashem? Where is Hashem, the Kutzker Rebbe asked. We all know the answer. Hashem is everywhere, right? Kamaishi says so. Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is simply everywhere. Right? But, and it's true. But the Kutzker Rebbe gave another answer. He said, wherever you let him in. Profound answer. We give Hashem that expression of this world, Kiviyah. Now I come back to Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was standing at Ur Kasdim. And he's being told that either you acknowledge the truth, Nimrod is God, or get thrown into the Ur Kasdim. Or in other words, in Avraham Avinu's mind, he's saying, either deny Hashem or get thrown into the fire. Avraham Avinu saw this as the culmination of all of his achievements. What bigger way could there be of expressing Hashem's oneness by being willingly thrown of his own choice into a fire because it's Hashem? Could there be any greater way of bringing out that it's Hashem? Who in his right mind lets himself get thrown into a fire? Right? He's doing it because it's Hashem. So on the contrary, this, in Avraham Avinu's mind, what's the question of? It's a question of Chilul Hashem, Kiddush Hashem. This was his purpose. This is what he understood the agenda of his whole life to be. Bringing out the greatness of Hashem. This would be done in the greatest way possible. But yes, the whole crowd would see that this man was willing to be burnt to a crisp. By the way, we know the end of the story. Avraham Avinu didn't know the end of the story at that time. Right? He was being thrown in, ready to be burnt to a crisp. That was his idea. Right? Haran was watching from the sidelines, trying to figure out which way to go. That was Avraham Avinu's idea. That's what in his mind, that's what he was doing. What was he doing? Fulfilling Hashem's purpose in creation in the ultimate way. As far as he was concerned, this was fulfillment of life. To be thrown.
A greater Kiddush Hashem.
Oh, came out even greater. But as far as everyone was concerned before him, this was the ultimate fulfillment of life. This is what life was for, to be able to do this. And of course, that's right. Hashem helped him to be able to bring about even a greater level of Kiddush Hashem. when he came out of there, the impression was even more. I suppose Nimrod had to go on a big propaganda campaign to counter it, but Avraham Avinu's message got across. See, around the world Avraham Avinu's message was starting to spread. So this is what we'll take away this week, the legacy of Avraham Avinu. This issue of living our whole life is a function of bringing out Hashem's presence in everything we do, in everything we don't do, actions, speech, even like we said, thoughts, also not doing things. Think of it in these sublime terms. It's not an issue of will I not eat this. It's an issue of by not eating this I'm bringing out Hashem's presence. By not saying this now, or by yes saying this now, I'm bringing out Hashem's presence. This is the Kiddush Hashem that Avraham Avinu bequeathed to us as his continuation, as the fulfillment of the purpose of the world.